Thank you. I'm so full, and not from food, not physical food, spiritual food maybe, that I'm about to pop. My voice may give out before I do. I titled my sermon, in case you want to know, if it's not really a sermon, y'all, I'm a speaker. But it's People Need the Lord, because I need the Lord, and you need the Lord, and everybody needs the Lord. The person who's making obscene gestures at you in traffic, the person who's in a hurry and butts in front of you in the store checking out, everybody needs the Lord. They just don't always know it, and that's what we're for. That's what God has us for, so that we can tell the news of Jesus Christ to the world. We're going to turn to Psalms 23 today. I'm not going to read the whole thing, just like the first three or four verses. Ray and I attended the camp meeting this week at Benson Grove Baptist Church. And I went Sunday, Monday, and did not go Tuesday. I was not well Tuesday, but Ray went every night. And I'm going to tell you something, that is a blessing, because it is a camp meeting, I didn't know this. It's a meeting, it's a revival for preachers. And so you've got a church of preachers all over the place. We had one guy who came from South Carolina, and when they announced his name, and I think his name is Burwell, and his name of his church is Burwell, he stood up and said, "Don't go to hell, come to Burwell." So, I mean, that's how wound up they were. They were all a little bit wild, I thought. I could imagine that from days gone by in the tents, you know. But this was just in a large church on 50 Highway. And gave me a lot of food for thought. The last person we heard on Thursday night was Mr. Osborne or Ogburn. I never did get his name clear in my head. But I'm going to be using some of his things that he had thoughts about in Psalms 23. "The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not be in want." And I use King James, the NIV. "The Lord is my shepherd, my guide, my teacher, my master. I shall not want for anything. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside the still waters. He restores my soul." Now I'm going to tell you something, and it's what the guy said, and I really never thought about it before. If you just look at verses 1 through 3, that sounds a little bit like paradise, like heaven. If you're a little sheep and you just have your shepherd and you just follow him wherever he takes you, and he takes you into green pastures, you can just lay down, and the guy said you just eat from this side, and then you can turn over, eat from this side, and then you can eat face forward and get full, be full following this master. And then he leads me beside quiet waters. Not a roaring, rushing stream that you would hear, or the ocean waters that's very noisy, but a very quiet place, a place of rest and solitude, a place where water can just quench your thirst and maybe your soul. He restores my soul. He puts me in a good spot with God. He guides me in paths of righteousness for his name's sake. He still guided me. But then we get to the bad part, and I never thought about it before in such a manner as this. My Bible says, "Even though I walk," but I learned it, memorized it as, "Yea, though I walk." Yea, though I walk. I thought, yea. "Though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me." He's talking about walking through the valley of the shadow of death, and the fact that from the day we're born, we are under that shadow of death, because we're born to die. There's not one of us that knows what time or day that will be. And if you've looked in the paper, in the last year, I have never seen so many young people in the newspaper, in the obituaries. It's very concerning. But we're all under that shadow. I mean, we go through it. My grandparents died, And then I lost a brother in 1995 at 40 years of age, healthy as a horse, looked good, from brain cancer. You just are not promised anything. And then you lose other relatives and your friends and your neighbors. And I'm sure the older you get, the more you feel that shadow of death hanging over you. They make it sound like it's an omen or a bad thing, but it's really not a bad thing, because this earth is just temporary anyway. Let's don't get too settled in, I'd say. Don't think that you put up everything you got and this is how it's going to be forever. We've had a friend and who had that experience. He thought he had everything. He was ready. He retired, and then his wife was going to retire soon. And she got real sick. And now she takes 24-hour care every day. Their world is turned upside down. The monies they thought they would be using to go on vacation and is spending maybe on a summer home at the beach is now spent just on medicinal things, just to keep life going every day. We can't get too cozy in this world. We cannot think. We can plan for our future. We all do. But we cannot just think that's it. It's not it. I'm sorry, I have a terrible dry mouth today. I may have put chewing gum in my mouth. I hope not. But I just looked back through that and thought about what he said. And you know, I'm not so different than my friends, because I've always been a hoarder. And I'm married to a hoarder. I call him Fred Sanford. But please don't do that to him. Okay. As we walk through the shadow, we need to think about the shadows on others, not just on us. You know, the disciples were out on the lake. Y'all remember that story in the New Testament? And Jesus, they got to the lake, and he said, y'all get in the boat, and you go right on across the Jordan River, and I'll meet you on the other side. He wanted some time alone. And he said, I mean, you know, the disciples probably asked a million questions a second, and he just, and he'd had people falling and pulling at him, and he just wanted some alone time with the Lord. And he told them to get in the boat and just go on over. Well, they got in the boat, and you know the story. Boy, the storm came up, and I can imagine the wind and the lightning. My greatest fear is being in a boat and it happening like that. And the water, no doubt, the waves were just coming in and swamping the boat. And they were afraid for their lives, and they were crying out to God, is this it? Is this all that there is to it? And now we're going to die. We're not even going to get to the other side to see our master. And then through that white rain and the waves, they see a vision or something out there. It looks like a man coming. And then one person said, it's a ghost. And Lord, you know that was scary. And then he said, it's me. It is I. And when he got there, he was just coming through the waves, and the preacher, he was showing how he just skipped over the waves. He's, you know, on all the movies and things, when you've seen this and all the pictures, you can see the water raging, but Christ is standing there like he's stoic in it. But it said he was hurrying over the waves to get to the boat so they could see him jumping the waves. Again, I can just think about the times I've been in bad places, put myself in danger. And Christ, I think, you know, he was hurrying to get to me. He was hurrying to send me some type of out from the shadow that I was in. And he always did. I may have told you before about being on 55 Highway one night when there was nothing down there where there used to be nothing but cornfields right after you come over the 64 Highway. Over on the right, there were cornfields and goats in that field. And I had a flat tire. And I was on my old 69 Dodge Dart. And y'all know that car was really pitiful. But anyway, I ran over a liquor bottle, and I knew it when I hit it. It was going to do damage to those tires because they were slick. And yes, it did. It flattened. So instead of pulling into the cornfield, though, at a driveway, I did have the sense to back in the driveway so I could see and make a quick getaway if I had to. But as I sat there, I thought, what am I going to do? Well, I got out and put the trunk up and started getting the tire tools out and everything. Well, I didn't have everything I need to get the lugs off. So I went down to the, there was a service station down there on the right, and I ran down there in high heels, people, and told him my dilemma, and he said, well, I'll be closing in a little bit, and I'll go down there and help you. And he didn't ever come. I went back about two or three times, and he said, well, I got a little bit more to do. So I said, can I use your phone? He said, yes. Well, I called the service station on the other side of the bridge. I had parked there before. He had allowed me to park free because he knew the lady that carpooled with me. And I asked him, would he come and fix my tire for me? And he said, no. He said, I don't do that after this late. He said, I'm about to close up. He said, no, and I didn't want to pay him a towing fee. I mean, you can't buy tires for your car. You really don't want to pay a towing fee, do you? I might not get the tire. So I said, okay, that'd be all right. That man said he would help me. He never helped me. That fella called. When I went back to the car, he said he'd be down a little bit. He never came. And it was dark, and I had borrowed some of his tools, however, and I was progressing to try to take the lug nuts off. And then the man from the service station pulled up in that big truck with all his, and by then it was pitch dark in that cornfield, and it was all the lights were blinking. And he went over and he started to, he said, I could not in good conscience go off and leave you out here by yourself. And he proceeded to tell me that a young female had been killed there within that year and left. They had found her out somewhere in that field somewhere. I said, oh, Lord, I didn't know that. But anyway, he got down there and he started getting the lugs off and changing the tire, and already had the tire out, so he just rolled it on. But he handed me the tire iron and he said, you hold this and look that way. I had not seen there was a man in the cornfield there behind him waiting for me to be by myself. And I saw him and I said, there's a man there. He said, I know, he's been there for a while. I could hear him. And so he said, if he makes a move, you let him have it. You know? And I would have. But anyway, God sent that man to me that night. He got my tire fixed, and he said, don't you stop until you get into Holly Springs. If you have all four tires go flat, you do not stop this car. He said, you get where there's some light. I said, okay, and I thanked him, and I thanked him again the next day and tried to thank him over and over. But you put yourself in some predicament sometimes you don't have to do. If I'd let that man come on and towed my car and fixed it at the shop, which would have been safer for him and me, I would have been all right. But, you know, we don't always have our right senses about things. Trying to save some money. And I had called Ray, and he went to get the girls. That's why he won't come. And I said, well, I'll get it done. Don't worry about it. But I will fear no evil. I wasn't fearing it until I saw it and looked it right in the face. And then when I pulled out, I said I was facing straight ahead. When I pulled out and had my lights on and the man watched me leave, the man from the service station watched me leave, my headlights shone on another fella in a field across the road. They were just waiting for me. And there is no doubt in my mind, I was saved that night. I was saved so my children would have a mother to come home to, you know, to take care of them. And I will never forget that. That man was my guardian angel, and he had cancer at that time, and I didn't know it. He did not live too long after that. So I hope he got an extra notch in his belt or crown or whatever. But the disciples were on the lake, and the Lord's coming over that water, and he said it, to be quiet. And it was. And it was quiet. Peace be still. Peace. He gives us peace. Just like we're by that quiet water. You know, the disciples had a need and they called out in fear. And God heard them and he came. I had a need, didn't even have sense enough to know it, and he came. Well, you know, I was looking at people who had issues. The woman who had the issue of blood, she had been bleeding, hemorrhaging for years. And you know, she's unclean. Nobody wants to be near her. She's considered unclean. You can't touch her, talk to her, be around her. And here she is, no doubt, so weak. I think of that girl as just kind of crawling along on her elbows in the mob, trying to touch Jesus' robe. Because she wants to be healed in body. I think in the scripture it says we should love the Lord our God with all our heart, our mind, and our soul. She loved him. She saw God in him. And she knew if she just touched the fringe, a snag in his robe, she'd be healed. And she was. He was there for her too. He called her out. He said, "Who touched me?" You think he didn't know who touched him? But he wanted her to own it and to say, "I did." And to admit she needed healing. She came to him for healing and he healed her. And he sent her on her way, a well woman. You know, we also, all of us have some kind of disease. You can have a disease of the mind. You can't control your thoughts, your body. Maybe you have some arthritis, something that bugs you to pieces. Or your soul, your heart. You got hate or anger for a brother or a neighbor or someone. You just won't let it go. Maybe it's pornography. Maybe it's jealousy. Maybe it's imbibing a little too much in a wine or a cocktail once in a while, and then you don't know how to stop. Those are diseases. Christ can take care of those diseases. You know, there was a woman at the well, and Jesus was sitting there, and he wasn't supposed to talk to her either. He likes to get women he's not supposed to talk to, evidently. But he saw her, and he told her if she knew who he was, she'd ask him for living water. I ask you today, do you know who he is? You've been introduced to him many times here in this church. But do you know him? Do you know him? Do you feel him right here with you all through the day? Even when I'm so aggravating and mean and talk back to Ray, I just feel the Lord right there and I'm so ashamed of myself. I don't know what to do, but I still want to pop him. But I do. But the Lord knows how I feel, don't he? And he forgives me. And he gives me an opportunity to apologize and to make things right. And I just pray Ray will accept that. He usually does. He gets me back one way or the other. Anyway. Then there's this little fella named Zacchaeus. I can relate to him because I've been told all my life I'm short. And I tell him I'm not short on anything. But he was short in stature, like me. Have to use the step once in a while. If there's something I won't get to, I will get to it. And you know, his shortness really and truly paid off to be an asset for Zacchaeus. Because Zacchaeus, that old tax collector, he had penny pinched and browbeat, I guess is what we call it now. So many people taking and gouging them for more money than they owed the king. So he would put in his own coffers. They wouldn't even let him stand around them. They'd just kind of squish him out. I can just see that. And he climbs up in this gnarly old tree and leaning on the limb, probably laying up like this, leaning and wants to see this Jesus he's heard so much about. He wants to just get a glimpse of him. He's got a desire in his heart to see this Jesus. And you know what? He had a miracle too because the Lord came right up to the tree and he said, "Zacchaeus, get down here right now in front of all those people who, again, he wouldn't think that he would associate with a crooked old tax collector. Scumbucket, we call him. Just a rascal." But he did. And he said, "Zacchaeus, come on down. I'm going to your house. I'm going to eat with you tonight. And we're going to talk." Zacchaeus got full. He got his heart fixed that day. He got his whole heart fixed. And he got his whole family, his household fixed. And then he fixed some families that he had messed up, and he gave them back more than he had taken from them. A lot of people were blessed by this. Sometimes we feel short on things, don't we? Short on joy, short on peace, short on love. Jesus can fix them all. You know, in John 10:10, he talks about the abundant life. Let me see if I can find that. I should be able to. Put me a thingy here. Jesus was talking, and he said, I am the gate. I'm going to start at verse 9. Whoever enters through me will be saved. He will come in and go out and find pasture. The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I have come that they may have life and have it to the full. King James Version says, and have it abundantly. Abundantly. You know, when you win the lottery, you have it abundantly to some people. That abundance won't last. But the life that he's offering us will last for eternity. This is just a minute in time for us. Just a minute. And then we have an eternity with our God. What a wonderful day that will be. He's the good shepherd. The very next verse, 11, he said, I am the good shepherd. Going back to being in that wonderful place. He's with us even in the valleys. And you know, the man pointed out the other night, he said, he wants good for us. He wants us to have the things we need. You know, I have all that I need. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. Won't want for anything. And Mr. Ogburn said the other night, he said, we're on the brink of the rapture. When Christ comes back and takes the ones who believed up, he said, we're right on the brink. And the way he put it, he said, and I'm in the mailbox with the red flag up. He's ready to go. He's ready to be delivered, isn't he? Man, I thought about that. Are you ready? You got your red flag up? Are you waiting for Christ to come? As I was thinking about this weekend, and I've known for months, since the Emmaus walk, that I would be speaking on this day, I've thought about it. I'm ready. I am so ready. But you know, I have so many people in my family, that are not ready. They hadn't even put their mailbox up yet, much less ready to get in it. They know Jesus. They shook his hand and they go to church and read their book once that one day a week. They're not ready because Christ expects more of us than that. You know, when we go and stand before him in judgment, he's going to ask us, how many have you brought with you? How many have you brought with you? And I believe Donna's talked about this. How many have you brought with you? Can you account for one person that you brought to Christ? Have you not talked to one child, your children, your grandchildren? Open the book and read it to them. When they do things that are not right, then your grandchildren, gosh, we love them so much. That's why we've got to correct them. And we've got to tell them that is not acceptable behavior in the sight of God or of us. And tell them to get it right. In Romans 8, verses 23 and 24, it said, not only so, I'll start at 22, it might make more sense. It says, we know the whole creation has been groaning as in the pains of childbirth right up to the present time. Do you reckon he's talking about the earth and the volcanoes and the earthquakes? No, he's talking about us. We've been groaning and can't get it right. Cannot get it right. But he said, not only so, but we ourselves who have the first fruits of the Spirit, the Holy Spirit, we groan inwardly as we wait eagerly for our adoption as sons, the redemption of our bodies. I have a new body. I won't have to go on and die anymore. For in this hope we are saved. Do you hunger for righteousness? To have a right relationship with God? We're going to have more valleys as we go through life. We're going to always have that shadow of death hanging over us, for our family, for someone there. But one thing about it is life gives us opportunities. God gave me a way out that night on 55 Highway. He gave me a way out, a way I could go home to my children and lead a life for Him. I wasn't ready that night to go meet Him. I was working on it, but I wasn't ready. And life's an opportunity to bring others into the fold. We can need to use those opportunities, and we need to communicate. We need to open our Bibles and talk to God. When you read the Word, it's Him and you. You're both in on that. Listen, read and be quiet. I had to wait. Ray goes outside. he talks when he's inside. But when you pray, it says in Matthew 6:6, go into your room and close your door and pray to your Father who's unseen. That's asking for faith, isn't it? To have faith. He said, blessed are those who believe and haven't seen. Pray to the unseen Father. We see Him, though. We see Him in the faces of children. I see Him in the faces of older people when their little eyes just shine with the glory of God in them. I see His face in some of yours today. We see Him in so many ways. Have faith. We also can go through a door of success. And this is what it's all about. Having faith, being faithful. It said, in this song he was singing, and I tried to find that in our hymnal. It's not in there. Must I go empty-handed? Must I meet my Savior so? Not one soul with Him to meet Him. Must I empty-handed go? This week as we go out of this church, let's meet them on the highways, the byways, and Walmart, and wherever they are. And let's invite them to church. But let's invite them more than that to Jesus Christ. Let's tell them He loves them, and He's waiting. He's waiting at the door. He's ready for them to come into His, with Him in this paradise that He's offering for an eternity. I'm going to have to see what I'm supposed to do next. We're going to sing Where He Leads Me, page 338.